And now we're going to switch gears here, talk about the big annual gathering of grassroots conservatives, CPAC, on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Around 10,000 attendees at the Conservative Political Action Conference that wraps up Saturday. As of earlier this week, President Trump was expected to give a speech. Are you following along with this year's CPAC? What issues would you like to see discussed? And what are your hopes for the conservative movement in America? Join in as we look at the future of conservatism at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Maddie Doepler is a senior fellow at the National Taxpayers Union. She's also the president of Forward Strategies, a consulting firm, and she's a speaker at this year's CPAC, also an Appleton native. Maddie, welcome to the Ideas Network.
With the hometown crew.
We got the hometown crew in the house, right. So for people who are unfamiliar with CPAC, can you give us the lowdown on what it is, what this conference is?
Sure. So as you mentioned, it is an annual gathering of conservatives. My first time going to CPAC was actually when I was a sophomore at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. College Republicans organized a trip to come out to CPAC, and that was my first time in D.C. and kind of sparked my love for the city here. So it's meant to really offer a platform both for young people who are just starting to understand their own political views, offer education on principles and policy, but also offer training on kind of the tactics of getting engaged in politics. And that's everything from organizing to, keeping an email list to getting engaged on social media, all of the tactics that make a successful political campaign. CPAC is put on by the American Conservative Union. That's another advocacy group here in Washington, D.C. And it's really meant to offer a community of ideas on conservative thoughts. This is everything from conservative economic theory to national security to everything in between. You've probably heard a lot the Republican Party traditionally referred to as a big tent, and I think CPAC reflects the diversity of ideas in the party and amongst conservative thinkers by trying to cover a lot of ground in the couple of days that CPAC takes place here in D.C.
Do you still feel that youthful inspiration at CPAC? Do you see this expression of ideas, or do you find that it's become a little bit more rigid among its ideals and not so youthful?
Well, I think CPAC is a reflection of the changes any modern political party needs to go through, which is there's always some inherent tension and growth, right? We see this on both sides of the aisle. And I think that at CPAC, what you'll see are ideas that maybe aren't necessarily in concert with one another because they reflect different perspectives on different topics. You know, there will be a panel where the president of American Conservative Union is interviewing Van Jones, who is a former Obama official, to talk about criminal justice reform, which is one of the bipartisan successes that we've had here in Washington, D.C. in the last year. So it's not so much a rubric for orthodox young conservatism as it is an ability to discuss ideas, talk about current events, as I think we will with criminal justice reform, that being a relevant victory in the near past. But also an opportunity to really kind of give, I think, insight to young conservatives who are looking for an understanding of policies and principles when they might not be super familiar with them. You know, when I came here in early 2000s, my views, I think, were probably very different than they are now. And I was still someone who wanted to be exposed to a whole marketplace of ideas to understand what I was thinking and understand how I fit into this movement. So I find it to be very helpful to have a lot of information and a lot of different ideas present, because that allows people to be exposed to them when they might not have that opportunity anywhere else.
We're talking about CPAC and the ideas that are surfacing at the Conservative Political Action Conference, now in day two in suburban Maryland. Maddie Doepler is our guide. She's a senior fellow at the National Taxpayers Union. She's also at this year's CPAC. Join in at 800-642-1234. What are your hopes for the conservative movement in America? Have you attended CPAC in the past? And if so, what was it like? What questions do you have about it? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Maddie, the CPAC website, which is where we found you, lists you as one of the speakers this year. Can you tell us about your role at this conference and what you're talking about?
Sure. So my area of expertise is fiscal policy. So I talk a lot about taxes and budget and finance. And particularly, I do a lot of media talking about the nexus between what's going on in Washington, D.C. and how it affects the financial world. So I'll be talking at CPAC this weekend about the economy. The title of the panel that I'll be on is called The Booming Trump Economy, an Oasis of Prosperity Surrounded by the Parched Economies in EU and Asia, which, of course, is a title that is meant to really, I think, inflame interest. But I'll actually be a part of a radio show that is being hosted live from the main stage, hosted by John Batchelor. And I will be alongside a couple other panelists, Liz Peek from The Hill, as well as Selena Zito, who is a columnist at the Washington Examiner and has a book out about kind of the constituencies that made up the Trump vote and where and how that constituency was affected by economic conditions.
I'm curious, yesterday, President Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, sat in front of Congress. Some really scathing things there. Is that being talked about in circles there at CPAC?
Well, I have to admit, I was in New York all day yesterday, so I missed all of the D.C. chatter on the Cohen hearing. I think that there will likely be a conversation about that. But I think that the thrust of CPAC really is a focus more on ideas than it is on personnel. And I think that there will likely be certainly plenty of conversations about if you are someone in a position where you're in front of a hearing and how you should testify, how you should conduct yourself, because as I mentioned before, CPAC is really geared towards giving young conservatives the tools they need to succeed in Washington, D.C. So I hope that, if nothing else, this does spark a conversation on proper protocols when you're working for the president. But I don't think that will get any main stage treatment because I think that main stage programming really is meant to offer an opportunity to discuss ideas.
And we've heard that President Trump will give a speech. We heard that earlier in the week. Do we know the status on that? Will he make an appearance? And if so, what will he say?
President Trump came to CPAC last year to great aplomb. So I know that ACU is excited to have him back. I can't confirm or deny whether or not he will be speaking at the event this week. I know that travel difficulties from Vietnam certainly play a factor there with him meeting with the North Korean president yesterday. So it remains to be seen. I'm hopeful that the president will be able to make an appearance, but if not, I'm sure that the attendees there will still have a lot of exposure to the administration. There are many cabinet officials who will be speaking on the main stage, in addition to counselors such as Kellyanne Conway and other high-profile people in the administration.
We're taking a look at CPAC, the Conservative Political Action Conference that's underway in Maryland. Our guide is Maddie Doepler. She is a senior fellow at the National Taxpayers Union. She's also at this year's CPAC and participating on a panel. Are you young and conservative? Do you look to CPAC to see what the agenda looks like for the future of the Republican Party? Are you following along with this year's CPAC? We're at ideas@wpr.org. Send your email to ideas@wpr.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll pick up the conversation in a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're talking about how conservatives are rallying the base at CPAC on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. A couple Wisconsin speakers at the Conservative Political Action Conference, including former Governor Scott Walker and Representative Mike Gallagher of the 8th Congressional District. The theme this year is What Makes America Great, a not-so-subtle play on the president's campaign slogan. Are you following this conference? Have you been to it? What conservative ideas do you want to see advanced at this annual forum? You can email ideas at WPR.org. Call 800-642-1234. Maddie Doppler is our guide. She is a senior fellow at the National Taxpayers Union, and she's also on the ground at CPAC and contributing to a panel discussion. So, Maddie, let's look for a moment before we get to taxes to look at trade. U.S. Trade Representative Robert Lighthizer told House lawmakers that real progress is being made in resolving the U.S.-China trade dispute. And you said that you found an interesting point of this year to be what Congress members have to say. What struck you there as you look at the back and forth between U.S. and China on trade?
Yeah, so of course, over the past year, the U.S.-China trade negotiations have been pretty volatile. The president and the administration have been very clear that they want to see profound structural reforms to the way China runs its economy, and China has been less forthcoming about what they would be willing to concede in order to get a deal that both sides feel they can find consensus on. So the deadline that both China and the U.S. were working against was this Friday. On March 1st, tariffs on Chinese imports into the United States were scheduled to rise from $200 billion worth of goods from 10% to 25%. The president announced earlier this week that he would delay those tariffs because there is significant progress being made. I certainly felt that that was a wise move given the catastrophic effect that tariffs can have on the domestic economy. But then that means that the one point of leverage that was really driving these negotiations all of a sudden evaporates. So the lead negotiator from the United States, Ambassador Robert Lighthizer, was in front of the House Ways and Means Committee yesterday. And we actually heard some interesting things from him. I thought that he would kind of toe the party line and continue to say, "We're making progress, but I can't comment further on that." One noteworthy comment that he made was that tariffs essentially won't come back into play in those U.S.-China trade negotiations. Now, you can read that two ways. You can read that as an indication that this is as far as we're going to get in the negotiations, because we know Trump himself does believe that tariffs are a useful tool. Or you can read that as a sign that there really has been enough progress made that the United States doesn't feel that they need a stick anymore, and they can instead use carrots to get China to really agree to the final components of a deal. We don't know how far along that negotiating process is. Robert Lighthizer, of course, was responsible for renegotiating the NAFTA deal, so he does have one significant trade victory under his belt. But the Chinese are a whole different ballgame than Canada and Mexico. So I am hopeful that we will see progress in the coming weeks and months there. But yesterday, I was also heartened to see both members on the Democrat and Republican side of the aisle really press the administration on the exclusion process for tariffs. The administration has used several different rationales for increasing tariffs on products being imported to the United States. But of course, as this process has always been an ambiguous one, companies are allowed to apply for exclusions from those tariffs if they say that they offer too much harm to their business. But the administration has wide latitude in granting those exclusions. So members on that panel really tried to get more clarity from Lighthizer as to how the administration was conducting this exclusion process and whether or not they would offer more clarity moving forward.
Well, I want to jump in here, Maddie, because I want to get this back to CPAC. But Willem in Colfax is on the line with us with a question. Willem, go ahead. Hey, Willem, can you hear us? There we go. Hey, Willem. Oh.
Hi.
Yeah, go ahead.
I had a question about the conservative movement. It seems like they used to stand for things like values, you know, honesty and anyway, sort of traditional values. And now that Trump is the leader, I wonder how they feel about, is it just about money now? Because obviously the president, you know, is a compulsive liar and he doesn't have any values, his former behavior.
Willem, let's pause there. Maddie, where do you see values right now?
Well, I think that, as we talked about before, especially with CPAC and the opportunity to talk about principles and ideas, the conservative movement continues to have those debates and what it means to be a conservative. And what it means to be a conservative is different than what it means to be a Republican. Obviously, in the United States, we've got two political parties, and those are your choices. So I think there's a lot of conservatives who still harbor reservations about what the Republican Party itself stands for. But conservatives, I think, still have a lot of opportunity and have demonstrated still the power of values and principled thinking and policymaking. And we see this in Congress. The beauty of the American government is that we have more than one branch of government. And Congress has continued to demonstrate commitment to those ideals through its legislating. I mentioned before criminal justice reform being a bipartisan effort last year. Other bipartisan efforts that haven't gotten a lot of attention but have been extremely, I think, noteworthy here in Washington, D.C., are efforts to address the opioids crisis, in addition to banking rules that really relieve some regulations on small banks and community banks in America.
Do you find at CPAC that Republicans are gelling around these issues? Because there is a wide variety of speakers coming from a lot of different walks of life. Some people are controversial. Do you find that there is unifying moments at CPAC, or do you find that there is some of these questions around why some people are getting a platform at CPAC?
Well, I think there can be both. I think that there can both be disagreement in conservative circles and unity. I think that that in and of itself demonstrates the health of a movement, that you can have disagreement about principles and policy while still recognizing the common threads that allow you to unite with one another and identify with one another. You know, the main tenets for why I'm a conservative are based in fiscal policy, but I can appreciate and understand people who vote on different issues identify as a conservative for different reasons. And I think that that is definitely a feature of the movement rather than a flaw.
So here we are smack dab in the middle of tax season. You are very much in the thick of fiscal policy. Some Americans have been expecting their usual tax return, and they're getting a really harsh wake-up call that they owe quite a bit of money under the new tax law. What do you make of that?
Well, and let me just clarify real quick. The data that the IRS has released shows that Americans are getting smaller refunds. They're not necessarily owing taxes at the end of the year. But this is a challenge that I think could have been anticipated back in 2017 and 2018 when the tax code changed. And it has to do with your withholding. Many Americans have been at the same job for many years. They filled out a W-4 when they started that job, maybe even 20 years ago, and they haven't checked back in with their employer to make sure their withholding is correct. So the first thing that every American should do, and this is good practice whether the tax code changes or not, is to make sure your W-4 and your withholding with your employer is correct. If you've gotten married, divorced, had a child, all these things will affect your withholding. So make sure that your employer has the right paperwork for you to make sure that your paycheck is properly affected. Now, the way that the tax cut was administrated in the beginning of 2018 was to change those withholding tables so that Americans immediately saw that benefit. Their paychecks got bigger. And we know that 80% of Americans at every income level got a tax cut when that tax law went into effect. And it showed up in their paycheck right away. Well, what that means is if you're making more money, at the end of the year, the government, when they changed the withholding tables, made it so that hopefully you wouldn't owe as much money as a result of you being better off throughout the year. But the thing that Americans need to understand is that your tax refund has nothing to do with your tax liability. Essentially, when you get a big tax refund at the end of the year, it's because you have given the government an interest-free loan for the remainder of the year. So I've been thinking through how we better educate Americans on this. Better fiscal practice to have your withholding be small rather than getting what Americans consider a windfall at the end of the year, because that's your money to begin with. And at the end of the day, when you get a big tax refund, that is money that you could have invested in yourself, you could have saved for yourself, you could have used for payments that you need along the way throughout the year, and instead the government has been sitting on it. So National Taxpayers Union, where I am a senior fellow, we've done a lot of research on this subject. We have a lot of different papers talking both about the tax refund issue, but also about tax complexity and what the tax code looks like. We really try to break down a lot of these issues so that they are more easily digested for the average American, so that when tax time comes, it's not a shock for the average American.
We have just a few seconds, Maddie. What excites you about the conservative movement and where it's headed?
Well, I think, again, it's just that ability to have that discussion, that debate about ideas. I really think that conservatives do a good job of allowing for debate on what the best policy is moving forward and how that affects what eventually happens here in Washington, D.C. So I'm looking forward to CPAC in the next several months and years of having those debates.
Maddie, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate. On Wisconsin.
Maddie Dupler is a senior fellow at the National Taxpayers Union. She's also president of Forward Strategies, a consulting firm, a speaker at this year's CPAC, and also an Appleton native. Coming up, we look at what energy policies are shaping up to look like in the Evers administration as the governor signs on to the U.S. Climate Alliance. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.